Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Heather Bigley, and this is our audio-only version of the show. We've been having some issues with Spotify. If you'd like to have the whole experience, including video clips and images of our guests and me having a chat, then you should head over to YouTube. Our YouTube channel is www.youtube.com/voiceoverpod. Thanks. Hope you enjoy the show.
You need someone in a position of power to give you the chance.
Welcome to VoiceOver. I'm your host, Heather Bigley. And I talk to people about the movies that made a mark that led to what we're calling cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today's movie is Hidden Figures, a biographical drama released in 2016, starring Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, and Janelle Monáe as Katherine Goebel Johnson, Dorothy Vaughn, and Mary Jackson, whose work at NASA helped America win the 20th century space race against the USSR. My guest today is Simranjeet Singh, assistant professor at Union Theological Seminary and senior advisor for the Aspen Institute's Religion and Society Program. He's the author of The Light We Give, How Sikh Wisdom Can Transform Your Life, published by Riverhead at Penguin Random House. And he hosts the podcast Wisdom and Practice, which is produced in partnership with PRX and the Aspen Institute. We're going to talk about the whole film, so please be advised. If you haven't heard about this part of American 20th century history, you have larger problems than spoilers. Stick around after the discussion for more movie recommendations.
I do recommend it to people, and actually I've been recommending it again recently to parents to watch with their girls. And I have girls, so I'm thinking about the kind of socialization around science and math and gender inequalities there. But yeah, I've been recommending it nonstop again in a way that feels weird because it's been a few years.
Yeah. One of the things that works really well in this film is the sort of editing motif of Katherine Goebel Johnson being handed a piece of chalk. So that's going to happen like in the beginning when the teacher says to her, you know more than everybody else in the room. Will you do this math problem for us? And then throughout the film, people finally recognizing her abilities and handing her the chalk so that she can do what she's good at. And I have to say that I kind of teared up when they have the final payoff.
20,530,372 feet, or 2,990 miles, or 46.33 degrees. Okay, so that puts your landing zone at 5.0667 degrees north, 77.3333 degrees west, which is here. Right here. Give or take 20 square miles.
But that idea of young women being encouraged, the tears started early for me because when the school comes to the family and says,
West Virginia Collegiate Institute is the best school for Negroes in the state.
It's the only school past the eighth grade anywhere near here.
Catherine's in the sixth grade.
They want to take her early.
They're offering a full scholarship. All you have to do is get there.
We took up a collection amongst the teachers and such. It's not a lot, but it's enough to help get you settled in.
Just that idea that the community gathers around and says, we can do it, felt like a beautiful reminder of why we're in communities.
There's this really interesting thing from the very opening scene where you're watching this young black girl in a context where people are surprised by her abilities. And right, like so much of that surprise comes from our assumptions about people and what they can and can't do, what they should and shouldn't do. Like, can a young child be good at math? Can a girl be good at math? Can a black girl be good at math? And then you're watching, or at least I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, like, I'm making these same assumptions all through. Like, why is this story surprising to me? In large part, I think it's because of the adversity around race and gender that people are able to overcome. And I find that very inspiring. But then there's also this like introspection that occurs as I'm watching it and saying, like, oh, the reason that I'm surprised is because I have all these same biases that I'm trying to address for my own kids, but they're being revealed to me in watching this story. I want to say it's like a religious experience, but not in the sense of like there is a spiritual climactic moment. It's more like the self-reflection that comes with mindfulness or meditative practice, where you watch it and it tells you something about yourself that you might have not known. And I really appreciated its ability to do that for me.
I grew up in Maryland in a small rural place. I can remember being a child, and my sister was really good at math, and that didn't seem like a startling thing. But I was very much aware in school that some people are supposed to be good at these things and some people are supposed to be good at those things. And those parameters were defined by who was a boy, who was a girl, who was black, who was white. So there just was this grid of there's certain things you can do, and you'll be happier and more comfortable if you can fit into the grid that's assigned to you.
There's something about being able to look at someone else's experience. If a friend comes to you with their relationship problems, it's so easy to see what mistakes they're making. And you tell them and they're like, I wouldn't have thought of that, but it's, you're right. And I'm like, yeah, obviously I can see it. But then like when you're on the other side of the table and you're sharing with your friend what you're struggling with, and they tell you, you're like, oh my God, how did I not see that? Right. And so there's this like really interesting thing that happens in our lives. When you're too close to it, sometimes you don't even know how it's working on you. And like to what you're describing, it's like taking those norms, right? The things that boys are supposed to be good at, or girls are supposed to be good at, or, you know, brown boys are supposed to be good at, or brown girls, you know, like you take these norms, and even when you know they're not inherently true, you still can't help but internalize them. And you don't even know when you're internalizing them when you grow up. I think it's easy for people who are thinking about social and cultural norms to point their fingers at people who are in majority groups or in power and just say, you're doing this to me. But we also forget that sometimes that becomes a part of our own psychology, and then we do it to ourselves and to one another. And like, there's something really interesting and powerful about that when you can put your finger on it. And I love that experience too.
Yeah. You said there are things that you saw and remembered that you loved about this movie. Let's start there. So what was it about Hidden Figures that you said, one, that you put it on this list, but two, that you, as you rewatched it, were like, right.
I think a good story sometimes is a remarkable story, meaning it's like, you can't make it up. The sort of like based on a true story kind of films always grab me, because there are these experiences that people have that I could never imagine this life or being in this position. And that's not just on the basis of race and gender and like time period. It's also like, man, I am not a science person. I'm not a math person. Like as I watch these women, like kind of like a lot of the characters in the film who are math and science people, they watch them and they're like, oh my God, like these people are special. And so I just love encountering a story about people who are exceptional, who are outstanding in their fields in some ways beyond what you would call a traditional expert. It's like the best of the best. And so there's something about that that I just found super interesting. I also really appreciate in the film, and you were sort of alluding to this a bit earlier, the attention to community and family. We have this mythos in our country of like, well, they pulled themselves up from their bootstraps and they figured it out. And it's like this rugged American individualism. And it's a story that historically is not true, right? Like nobody does anything on their own. But also like we accept it as true and then we mythologize around it. And we forget about everyone in someone's life, even an exceptional person who enables them to do the exceptional thing. And so in my life stage now in my 40s, thinking a lot about family and community and these kinds of relationships, to see that depicted in such a honest human way, right? I didn't notice that last time around, and probably because I wasn't thinking about these things in my own life in the same way. And just the third, getting a window into the kind of racial politics of the mid to late 1900s. You know, I was born in the 80s and I didn't experience it, but I find it fascinating, but not in like this spectacle kind of way. It's more like we may not have lived through something like the Jim Crow South, but we know it to be true because there are remnants of that today. And so to see those experiences depicted with some real care, right? Like the fact that one of the main characters had to go about a half a mile to go use the bathroom because there was no colored bathroom for women at the Space Center. Like, I found that to be one of those small details where it wouldn't have ever occurred to me. And then as soon as they said it, I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, why would there be? Why would I expect there to be just because it feels normal now? Like, they're small things, but they're so big because it's like, it gives you the texture of what that life must have been like. And I loved how those were woven into the story from the very beginning and then all throughout to the end. So it was just really eye-opening for me in that way.
Yeah, I want to talk about everything that you just said. So let's start at the end there. I thought, what an excellent way to say to an audience that these racial policies were not just attitudes that made people feel bad. I think there's a way in which majority culture can minimize what people went through being like, well, you know, if you're just tough enough or if you like whatever it is, here is a concrete way in which someone's life was impacted every single day. No one even thinks to say, and where are you going to use the bathroom? And she does have to do this hike. It takes her 45 minutes. People start commenting on it as if it's a moral failing of hers.
God, where have you been? Are you finished yet?
Almost. They say by the end of the day.
The end of the day around here was yesterday.
I need those done first.
He wants those done first.
Okay.
Get going.
When really she's just trying to abide by the rules that have been set up. She resents them. It's not fair to her, but she's trying to live with them. I thought, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about is, yeah, that mythologizing of sort of white achievers. We actually see it in the film a little bit too, right? Where there's that moment when they're going to like really crack down and they're really going to commit. And they're just like,
I suggest you call your wives. Tell them how it's going to be.
I think it's going to have a bigger impact on your wife's life that you're going to be spending 18 hours a day here than just you won't be home for dinner. But we know in the life of Catherine Goebel that it's not just I won't be home for dinner. Like, her mother is here helping with the children. The children don't get to see her very often.
You've been gone for 300 hours.
I know, I work a full-time job now. You all know that. I have to be mommy and daddy.
This is going to be a really big sacrifice for the entire family. And so the thing that really touched me about this movie was all the supportive husbands. We have Catherine Goebel, Dorothy Vaughn, and Mary Jackson. And each one of them, it's not as if the husband of each of them is just like, oh, sure, do what you want. They have to have a conversation.
I don't understand.
They're communicating about again, what they need.
But
I have to say, like, watching those husbands eventually come to a point where they're like, yeah, this is what you're supposed to be doing, and I'm supporting you however I can. That was another teary moment. And I thought of my own husband who has moved 3 times for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like, he moved to where I was going to do my PhD. He moved to where he's moved twice for jobs that I've taken. And just that act of saying, okay, this is what we're going to do because it's going to benefit you. Just made me go, that is such a wonderful thing to see on screen, that these husbands are so supportive.
It's really interesting to hear you say that because I didn't notice that in the film. I mean, obviously I saw those scenes and I know exactly what you're talking about, but I hadn't quite thought of it that way. If we think about how storytelling works and how history works, right? I'm a historian. Every story has multiple perspectives. And what would the story look like from the vantage point of people who are in these women's lives and in their homes and making these sacrifices? I mean, they have to have conversations. And some of those conversations were pretty tough, right? Like, they really had to figure out how to make it work, which I resonate with. Like, that's my life with my partner. Feels like every day is like, how are we going to figure out how we're doing this? But like, that's also maybe the dimension of the film that feels so relatable, that it's like our lives are so hard in their own ways if we just take a moment to look at them and how people need to step up in order to make everything work.
Yeah, there are hard discussions, but I think the beauty of being in the middle of a hard discussion as someone talking to your partner is, oh, they want to be in the hard discussion with me, right?
That's true.
They're not just saying, whatever, or you're going to do what you want, or, well, sure, I'm not doing anything. They want to come into this hard discussion and really talk it through. Things matter to them. But they're also saying, and I'm willing to compromise and negotiate. That is super important. The other thing I wanted to say, I wanted to go back to your very first point, because we do see Katherine Goebel Johnson. She has this brilliant mind. But the thing that also stood out to me was there are rooms full of women with brilliant minds at NASA. They're segregated. There's a room full of brilliant Black women called computers, and there's a room full of brilliant white women called computers. It's because of them that NASA can actually do all the things that it's trying to do. And yes, there's that room of brilliant white men, but to me it was like, you know, we didn't just focus on Katherine Goebel Johnson. We focused on a variety of women.
And there are two things that calls out for me. One is, you remember the scene at the end of, very close to the end of the film, where she's trying to go into the meeting of all those heads and leaders, and they're all white men, and she's asking to be let in, and they say, well,
I could stay.
Katherine, we have been through this. It is not possible. There is no protocol for women attending.
There's no protocol for a man circling the earth either, sir.
Okay, you know, that is just the way things are.
Which is, right. I mean, such a common, not even excuse, such a common reason given for not changing things that are unfair or unreasonable, yeah. Right?
We've like, always done it this way.
Why would you question? Why would you want to change it? Things are fine. And things weren't fine, right? And they weren't going to be solved without her intervention. And so, like, I loved that element in the story because it sort of called out that rationale that is underneath a lot of these systems and structures we talk about, especially when it comes to sexism or racism or other things. I also really loved that once she was let into the room, she showed that she could hang. They all looked at her, and she was the one who could solve it, and no one else knew, including her direct supervisor. So like there is something really interesting about the juxtaposition of these different racial groups. I mean, they really are groups, like they're segregated in the film as they were historically. And at the same time, we can tell ourselves a story of like the separation meant that there was a sense of boundedness, meaning like you couldn't permeate and there was no interaction across. And like from the very beginning of the film and all throughout it, you're reminded, oh, these people know each other. They know about each other. They know about each other's families a little bit, at least. They're interacting on a daily basis and they're trying to figure each other out. And sometimes it's supportive and complimentary, and sometimes it's tense and antagonistic, right? But like that also, I think, feels so much more real and honest than other ways that we tend to tell these stories.
The film is advocating that we need to pay attention to Black genius and Black excellence. And we're going to do and accomplish so much more if we actually work together instead of siloing ourselves or segregating ourselves, because it's more comfortable. And I say that as a white person, as part of the majority culture, right? In a lot of ways, it's more comfortable for me to be with other white people because I don't have to ask myself difficult questions and I don't have to face my own racisms.
Right.
So.
Sorry for the honk. New York. Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point about Black genius and Black excellence, and I think this is probably something else that makes the film attractive to me. This is true for my own community as a Sikh, and I think it's true for a lot of marginalized groups, that there's something that I desire about my own community storytelling, that it goes beyond the adversity we face. Like, that's certainly part of our story, but that's not everything about who I am, and that's not all I want people to know. This film, even though it's situated in a context of real inequality, that's not the point of the story, right? The point of the story is the excellence and the genius of these women, without whom we would not be where we are as a country, right? So like there's something that I really find attractive about that, and I find inspiring as a storyteller of like, okay, there are ways to tell these stories that aren't just stuck in those same tropes.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was done really well here was we have Kirsten Dunst playing the executive secretary in charge of a group of white women who are also computers. And there's a lot of tension between her and Dorothy Vaughn, played by Octavia Spencer. And at the end of the movie, right, Kirsten Dunst's character says,
"You know, Dorothy, despite what you may think, I have nothing against y'all."
And then Dorothy Vaughn is going to say back,
"I know you probably believe that."
I just thought, yeah, this is a reminder, right? Like, just constantly being aware of what do I bring into this conversation? What are the power dynamics at play is important. And also, I would have to say the recognition that Mrs. Mitchell herself is under these gendered pressures as well. And it's unfortunate that instead of like linking elbows, they saw themselves in competition with each other. But that would have had to be
what happens, right?
Yeah, that would have had to be something that Mrs. Mitchell, the white woman, would have had to like actually allow for, is linking the elbows instead of saying to herself, at least I'm better than this group because they're black.
So, okay, here's one of the things that kind of shifted for me in watching this film this last time, which is the last couple times I saw it, there was a part of me that was a bit annoyed by the sort of white savior part of the story. And watching this film this time, it also feels true that you need someone in a position of power to give you the chance. In my own versions of this, it's like, I want to write a book. I need a editor to take a chance on me, and they don't know the community I'm writing about. They don't know this world that I'm living in. It also happens to be that the majority of these editors are white. So like, it is the way that our world is working. And so like, this savior, maybe it doesn't need to be so emphasized in the way that it was in Hidden Figures, but like, it's true that if someone hadn't been willing to give me a chance to be in that role of writing the book, or there's also a white woman who's the president of the seminary where I'm teaching now, like if she didn't believe in me, I wouldn't have a chance here, even though I'm not doing stuff that's in her wheelhouse. So it is true that our world works in such a way that you need someone in a position of power to help open doors in contexts where there are inequities across the board. I feel a little bit differently watching it this time. Maybe I feel a little bit less annoyed and a little bit more okay with understanding that this also depicts something that resonates with my lived experience in some way.
Yeah. So you did say there were things that, as you watched it, you felt critical of. What other things do you look at and go,
Yeah. You know, my girls are pretty young. They're in elementary school. They love math and science in a way that feels organic right now, but hopefully we're instilling it in a way that continues. And this past summer, we went to NASA Space Camp in Alabama. And it was my daughter's dream, and her hero in life now is Katherine Johnson. Like, she wants to be a NASA mathematician. I'm struck by the fact there wasn't really any tension of someone trying to navigate the social dynamics of being a girl of color who likes math and science and is good at it. And I'm not saying it has to be the case, and I would love for it not to be the case. And so it may not be true in the lives of these three women, but it does strike me as like almost like a missed opportunity to help show the journey of someone who struggles with confidence. Like, maybe it's social confidence, or maybe it's their confidence in their own abilities. It's almost like there is a certainty within these women. And I think that's part of their strength, right? It's part of what's cool and attractive about them is that they know that they're good at this, and they believe that they can do it and that they belong. What about so many of us who don't always feel like we belong? And what does that look like?
Yeah. For the Katherine Goebel Johnson character, I kept thinking, she's doing all of this because she's a widow. She's got to find a job. She's got to find the very best job. There's a certain amount of impetus pushing her to do these things.
That's really interesting.
Happily married people, do they accomplish anything? Is that the question that I'm ultimately asking?
I feel that. I would say in like the 2 hour windows that they get each day between soccer practice and math class, which is, yeah, that's my life.
Yes. Okay. You sent me this list of movies and I picked Hidden Figures, but the other movies on the list were Logan, totally love, Last Samurai, never seen, Life of Pi, Wonder. So do you see in that list any commonalities? Like, why is this the list for you?
Huh, what is the common thread? Like, these are in at their core, they're like anti-imperialist commentaries and ask us to trust ourselves and our communities. Resistance and spirit, I think, are probably like the two words that are coming to me in terms of thematic connections among these films. Give me a story of someone that I would never get a chance to know myself, and just let me live in their shoes and in their skin for a little bit and understand their lives. And I think that sort of connection around like the empathy it builds, but also the understanding beyond like what's written in a textbook of like 1950s Southern America. Tell me the story of that person and help me connect with that. So maybe those are some of the connective tissues there.
Thanks to Simran for sharing this movie with me. He's not our first guest to find meaning and inspiration about the American civil rights movements and how it impacted the individual. Check out our episodes about Malcolm X and Remember the Titans when you get a chance. And I was really intrigued when Simran said he was interested in films about experts or geniuses who can accomplish amazing feats beyond us regular folks. And I thought I'd use that as a guide for my recommendations today. If you're interested in a story about a woman prevailing against the underestimations of the people around her, try Joy from 2015, directed by David O. Russell. It stars Jennifer Lawrence as a woman who loves to solve the problems right in front of her. And in fact, she invents a self-ringing mop that launches her to economic stability and feelings of self-worth. This is Lawrence's third film with Russell, and she absolutely shines on screen. It's a story about hard work and determination that feels like a fairy tale. Another film with a stellar performance from its lead actress is The Post from 2017. Directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, it's a historical film about the 1970s. The film documents how the Washington Post published the Pentagon Papers, which revealed how involved the U.S. government had been in Vietnam over decades. But the real revelation here is Meryl Streep, which I know sounds crazy. I mean, we all know she can do any accent, and she can bring to life the emotions of women under extremity. But I literally caught my breath in the theater watching her communicate to the audience the complex social navigations that she had to do as a smart, capable woman who has to manage the emotions of men all around her so that they don't feel threatened or upstaged, so they feel like they're in charge and not challenged, even while she's their boss. And one of my favorite films about genius is 32 short films about Glenn Gould. Glenn Gould was a virtuoso pianist known best for his performance and interpretation of Bach's Goldberg Variations. The film is what we call an anthology film, a collection of shorter films that create a greater whole. And as the title suggests, there are over 30 films in this little collection that range from interviews, animated interpretations of Gould's music, and reenactments of particular moments in Gould's life. It's more creative and more persuasive than any other biopic I've ever seen. Special love goes to the segment called Gould Meets McLaren. VoiceOver is produced by BYU Radio and edited by Spencer Boyer. I'm your host, Heather Bigley.